Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we're going to dive into the greatest threat to the galaxy. Have we said that before? Yep. It's kind of a theme in 40K writing. Everything is the greatest threat to the galaxy.
I say Abaddon and the Silent King are both going, what the hell,
yeah,
bro?
Hey, we were just there. Tau have not been. sorry, I don't hate Tau. It's just fun at this point. But before we begin, I'm going to check you guys' electricity because we have some plugs.
Indeed, we do.
All right. So first off, obviously, like and subscribe to the cast if you haven't already. Number two, we do have a very, very good Discord. That's, I think we're at this, at time of writing, we're close to 400 members. It's quite active. A lot of discussions about lore, gameplay, modeling, memes, etc. Join. We make no money off it, by the way. I just think it's a great way for people who like this cast to come in and interact and be able to kind of ask questions. We are both very active in there. So if you listen to the cast and you say, hey, what were you referencing? I'll usually get back to you within a couple hours. It's on my phone. So if you're looking for a place to interact, come hang out with us there. Also, if you want to support us, we do have a Patreon. The link's in the show
we
notes.
We need new equipment. It'd be cool if we had some help.
It would help us get new equipment like microphones that can pick up when I lean away from the microphone because guess who has no experience working in radio?
Hey, you guess this who guy. Gets yelled at a lot for the thing that I do for a living? Also, if you'd like to get one, coaching.
The other one is Brad. So Brad actually does coaching for 40K. And when we say coaching, we don't mean like, you know, oh, I'm in the running for a top 10 seeding in ITC and I want to get a little bit better. Brad can actually just teach you the basics of the game too. He's been doing this for a while. You can reach him at
oldmanbrad40k@gmail.com.
Or you can just go to the 40klorecast.com.
And click the link.
Click on Brad. There's a link there. So you guys don't have to write down what he just said. There's a link there. You guys can get over from there.
And I'll come to do things too. If you're, especially, I talked to this with people putting on events and conventions and stuff like that. I love to do in-person classes and stuff like that. So if you have anything like that, you're looking, I've been doing stuff with the armed forces and all kinds of other things. So I'm willing to go places and do things. Mm-hmm. I like to talk and I like to have people listen to me.
That is very true. We both have that. That's why we made this cast. All right. So on to today's cast. So today is going to be the first of three casts on the Tyranids. This is because the Tyranids are one of the first Xenos added to the game. So their lore is long and extremely intertwined into 40K.
It's also everywhere.
Yeah. Well, now.
I'm just saying.
That's like as of a year and a half ago.
No, I'm saying, but it's been, I'm not even talking about.
You mean the lore?
The lore itself has been, it's probably the most retconned because of the fact that they kept adding and adding and adding to it.
Squats.
Well, they might not even exist, okay?
I mean, when we write the show notes, I originally wrote the show notes, they are the most retconned army. And then I went, and I literally went and pulled old codexes, and I was like, oh no, it's the squats.
I think you meant to say space dwarves.
Space dwarves. Anyway.
I'll keep that box forever.
So today's cast, though, we're going to focus on the background of the Tyranids, what we know of it, kind of how they function, what brought them to the galaxy, where they appear to be going to the galaxy, and some theories on their end goals. This is all theories, both Brad and my theories, but also remember the game of 40K is written from the perspective of the Imperium. There are some, if you read, I think the 5th edition Codex of Tyranids, there are some codexes that are written from the perspective of the Tyranids, but then they
very few and far between.
Yeah, but then those went away pretty quickly. So it's kind of a cool thing with the Tyranids that we are passengers on the journey of like people are learning, oh, this is what we think they're up to. So they're not only this massive threat and almost, you know, almost infinite size.
Alien goals. Yep. You have no idea even what they want.
It's definitely not to win a baking championship. Well, also, TBD.
Are we going to have to talk about the fact that there was a negotiation at one point in time that got retconned out of existence?
I would rather not discuss the Zotes, but we're going to actually very quickly. So can we, let's just jump right into that. So.
Boo.
As far as the GW getting retconned, here are some things that we're going to touch on very briefly in this cast because they were stupid. One, Zotes. We'll talk about them in a minute. They're dumb. Two, they actually allied with other factions at one point in the game.
Yes.
People made alliances with the Tyranids.
And this is something that has completely been... That didn't get retconned. That got hit with a hammer.
To be fair, when GW retcons things, they just don't talk about it ever again and hope you forgot they wrote it. This one seems to have actually been written out of the game.
Yeah, they just said no.
Anything, everything outside of, hey, send your codexes back to us so we can cross some stuff out of it.
Yeah, this is a big deal because originally the Tyranids were being allied with, but just they were negotiating with.
Yeah, the Zotes were literally negotiating with mankind.
Which this is why it bothers me. You know, screw this. I'm going on a Brad tangent.
We can do because
this made no sense to me, and it never made sense. And I think that the GW writers afterwards didn't think it made sense. I don't know how this got through because what happened is Gene Steelers were original, but the Zotes have no place in all of the lore for the past 30 some years.
Well, the Zotes. Okay, so the key thing is what they've done with it is that they've kind of messed with some timelines. The Zotes technically ceased existing before the first Tyran.
Yeah,
and so it's a weird that I just made some references. If you don't know Tyranids, this will all make sense in the next couple episodes.
But these guys make no sense to me at all because of the fact that the big draw for Tyranids is that they're this unknown force that's
monstrous.
You have no idea where it's from. Is there more? Is this because the biggest threat?
Exactly. It's always is this the end of the threat?
Correct.
Followed by no.
Yeah. Well, that's the biggest thing is also, is this a scout force?
Yeah.
You know, this thing that we're having a hard time dealing with it at all. Is this a scout?
It just ate a chunk of the galaxy.
Yeah, it's also unknowable. Are these directed by, because we found out about different hive minds and. Is there an overpowering one? Is there multiples? What are we even dealing with? And the answer is you don't know. And that's one of the things that GW wants. That's why the Zotes made no sense to me.
Yeah. And beyond the Zotes also, we also have the definition of first contact that moved a bitch. But I just want to defend GW a couple of things with Tyranids. One, I actually think they're one of the best written races in the game.
Agreed.
When we talk about orcs, Brad and I both love orcs. The thing that's weird about orcs is orcs on paper are the most terrifying force in the galaxy, but they wrote them to be funny. Tyranids, they kept the funny out. They left the funny at home.
They're just terrifying.
They made this a true invasion force.
They also doubled down when they went to GSC, who are even more terrifying.
The Tyranids are objectively a horrifying threat to the galaxy. Mostly because they don't carry, and we'll get this in a second, it's not malice they're acting with. No, following.
And that's why the Zotes
make no sense. What they're doing.
Because one of the biggest fear, why they're so scary, is that you can't negotiate with them. There's nothing to negotiate.
Yeah, they just show up and you die.
Right. Can we get a ceasefire? No, there's nothing. And that's why it's so terrifying, because it's just this force that is coming at you and you can't do anything about it. It's only aggression, period.
So the disclaimer we'll make for this is you're going to hear stuff where some of this stuff has been retconned, depending on what you're reading. We're trying to cover everything here to give you guys a better example. We're not just trying to do a lore as of we're recording this in June of 2024. We don't want to kind of just give you the lore that is today. We want to give you a bit of the journey because Brad and I are both there for the journey. I mean, Tyranids are a weird one because this is an army I was playing before Brad played the game.
Interesting.
Because I was playing in the early 90s and I stopped for almost 20 years, but kept reading the lore. So Tyranids I've known forever. But just for people to understand, when Tyranids came to the game, there were only eight playable races. Space Marines and Chaos Space Marines, which at this part of the game were the same army, just painted them differently. You had Guard, which were really minimal. You did have Squats at this point.
Space Dwarves.
They went away. Eldar, no Drukhari, just straight up Eldar. Orcs, you had Demons came in right about this time as Tyranids. I guess Gene Stealers cult existed.
And Demons were kind of their own weird thing.
They were very different.
Yeah, because they were also basically an offshoot of Chaos. Remember, you would summon them.
Exactly. I was pulling codexes. So I luckily had every codex ever made. Did I purchase all of them? Obviously not. PDF would definitely be the format many of these things are in. But anyway, when you go back, it's how I do research for this cast. I go back through and read the old ones. But that kind of gives an idea. Tyranids were actually one of the first fully fleshed out Xeno species. after Eldar and Orc. It's somewhere in that.
And one of the lures of them is really they played differently, but they also had a different lore. Again, yeah. They were this alien intelligence, and they use that term quite a bit.
I will admit, though, some of their early models looked so bad.
Yes, but all the original models look terrible.
Yeah, but it was just more the size scale.
They're so tiny.
It was just funny to be like, this is a Termagant. Cool, what's that? That's a Carnifex. It's like 8% bigger.
Yep.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, it'll throw a building at you. You're like, look how cute he is.
He's he's pretty adorable.
But the alien intelligence thing, and I'm going to use that term quite a bit because GW used that a lot.
Yes.
In the beginning, because one of the things that makes Tyranids so threatening is not just the no negotiation and everything. You just don't know what you're even dealing with. And the Imperium had such a hard time because the Tyranids, one of the biggest things they are is adaptive.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's get into
it. We'll get what I'm saying. Let's
get into that in a bit because I want to start with just kind of where they are. So Tyranids are the only piece of the entire 40K that are not native to the Milky Way.
I mean, they might be if it's old ones.
Chaos. Chaos, but at least they're coming from outside the Milky Way. Because even the way they write the warps appears to be somewhat native to or at least.
I think that we said this in one of the last casts. I really think that the warp still has a geography.
Yeah, it would just make sense. And I'm not saying it makes sense from like a physics standpoint, just from if you're doing game design.
It's the upside down.
Yeah, well, it's also, if you're doing game design, you kind of have to do it this way. You can't be like,
really think that if you watch Stranger Things, it's similar to that. Flip side of
that's true.
Of the material universe.
Now, one thing I'm going to get into here, because I'm just going to bitch about it now. The Tyranid invasion is coming from the eastern fringe of the galaxy.
Three dimensions don't exist, John.
There's also no north and south. Like there's no polarity in a universe. Just because you see they're coming in from the right side, it would be just as accurate as seeing the eastern fringe.
I mean, you're not even bothering with the 3D. You're just upset about the northeast.
That was not a very fun one, by the way. Because in my head, I'm like, they can't be this wrong. I looked it up. And now they are. I will defend them a little bit. The galaxy is somewhat flat-planed. Well, at least we thought so until about 20 years ago. We discovered, no, it's actually incredibly diverse. And the distance between the highest, in a 3D, if you look at 3D realm, the highest and the lowest is like 10,000 light years. So whatever.
It's a big deal.
It's massive. But anyway.
If you were looking at a 3D model, the Tyranids are coming from the bottom right, basically.
Yeah. Although not anymore. That's what gets that.
True.
Not now. But the Tyranids originally came in on the eastern side, although we're not actually entirely sure about where the first contact came from, because as with Imperial history, it's a matter of what's been recorded.
Also, the Tyranids destroy, let me back this up real quick. We're going to cover this a little bit more later, but one of the biggest things I thought was terrifying and one of the biggest things about the Tyranids is the Tyranids have an overwhelming psychic presence.
Yep.
They cut off originally, it's a little bit different in lore now, but originally when Tyranids showed up, they effectively jammed your comms.
Oh, no, they still do. I mean, in modern lore, it still does. It just goes black.
Right. Because you can't contact anyone to tell you that an invasion's happening. So how many planets, how many systems did the Tyranids destroy before we knew that they were there? Who knows?
Making it worse is that, again, we'll cover this later, when the Tyranids move through a system, they leave behind a barren rock. They don't conquer. So if you've never been to that part of the galaxy, you would get to that part of the galaxy and say, oh, wow, everything here is dead.
Well, it's another barren rock of a planet, which is the majority of planets.
The majority of the planets. All right. But let's go with what the Tyranids are. The phrase I wrote is they're an evolving biomass of violence and consumption with a centralized intelligence. Could be singular, could just be centralized. This is what we don't know.
You know what? I can't be bound on this, John.
Go for it.
Adaptive. Evolving is the biggest thing, and why they're so fearsome. If you showed up with tanks, they show up with genetically engineered grown creatures that now kill tanks.
Yeah.
You brought a bunch of infantry. Well, the next battle they're going to have guys, and it's that fast.
We forgot to do our normal caveat of if you play Tyranids and you like Tyranids and listen to this cast,
sorry,
you're going to be horrifyingly disappointed by how they play the tabletop because they're nowhere near as cool.
And that's what big thing we're going to go into later on is the different high fleets. And no one gets sold. I can't say that. I got to reel that way back because there's so many armies that don't have what they have in lore. Tiernan's are amongst our weaponry is in Tiernan's is, man, this army does not get its due justice from the lore to the tabletop as far as the differences in the fleets, how easily they adapt. And that's such a big thing.
I would just say numbers. I mean, I don't think anyone wants to actually own 1,000 gaunts to put them on the table, but that's what it, that's what.
But the gaunts are different every fight.
I know, but my point basically is the volume. Yeah, the volume.
Yeah.
But anyway, so we don't know kind of how the Tyranids formed, but we just know what they are.
Or where.
Yeah, or where. The key thing, one of the most important points about them, though, is synaptic control, hive mind. I mean, we've all played StarCraft. We know this.
Which is a big deal in this, though, because of the fact that they found the Imperium found it fairly quickly that these were controlled, puppeteered, because once they killed certain organisms, they killed certain things on the field of battle, that Tyranids would just run around and do nonsense, basically. They would attack whatever.
Yeah.
They would hide from whatever.
Once you pull out, I mean, what we call a synaptic linchpin out of the army, they would lose, they seem to lose purpose. They would move more animalistic.
Correct.
But we don't know how this functions. We just know that it does function. Yeah. We just know that it does function. And we have commander units that are basically transmitters. That's what we understand from the experience of getting lucky and blowing the right thing up. Yeah.
And we still don't know if this is one consciousness, five consciousness, but we do know that a larger consciousness is controlling the Tyranids, period.
Yep. Now, some units, though, do have the ability to work independent of the hive mind. Lictors are an example of this, genius sealers. They actually seem to be able to operate without contact.
And they imbue them with their own. Mm-hmm. These are specifically engineering. Gene stealers are the most. Stealers and Lictors are the most famous.
Yeah. The other thing, too, about them is the way they operate. So it is a locust swarm. The Tyranids are not a conquering species where they're taking worlds and then converting them over to being their worlds. They come in, they consume every last piece of biomass on that planet and move on to the next one.
Independence Day.
Yeah. This was the plot of Independence Day. For those of you who aren't American and didn't ever watch it, or maybe you did watch it, it's a decent-ish film with a lot of terrible parts in it. That's what I would say. Starring Will Smith.
Pre-slap Will Smith.
That came out in the 90s. That was pretty not bad.
Screw you. Independence Day was awesome.
Watch it again.
No, because it will not be as awesome. Yeah, it's
like, watch it again. You're like, oh. Like,
don't. Yeah. I'd say don't ruin my childhood, but I was wildly an adult by the time Independence Day came out.
It's not. I mean, that's what I said. People are like, don't ruin my childhood. Rewatch Goonies, it's still good. Rewatch Independence Day, like, oh, this kind of sucked.
Also, they made a second movie. It was wow.
Yeah, didn't watch that one.
But you should.
Last one, though, about them is we do now understand they seem to have a very key goal once they're in the solar system, and that is Holy Terra.
I'm literally gathering chi together right now, physically holding my hands, you and my Wusa, because this is one of my favorite and least favorite at the exact same time things about Tyranids is the Astronomicon is effectively a bug zapper that they are drawn to and they are originally drawn to pull them into the galaxy. Is this cool or is it lame?
Depends on my day.
Really roll a six-sided on a four up. I think it's awesome. On a 1-2-3, I think it's stupid because I like the idea of it drew them to the galaxy. I hate that they're still...
Well, but it didn't draw them. We're going to go in a second. But that's the problem. It's more like it's what's drawing them when they're in the galaxy to it.
True. But I'm saying it's a bug light. They're bugs. I mean, it's just, it is what it is.
But one thing about that, though, even though the GW has written it, they're not rushing towards it like the way Horus was or Abaddon was.
That's the thing is
Abaddon.
I'm gathering my
moving with a direction to the
galaxy. But is it a purpose? My thing is that. Yeah. What is their end? We don't know their end goal. I guess that's one of the biggest mysteries. Screw it. I think it's cool again. I rolled a four up.
Yeah.
Because
if you like the mystery, it's cool.
Because they're not going, like, if this was their goal, they would be beelining, and they're not. They're meandering. Like, the Tyranids aren't going in a straight line. You would say, this is what our end goal is.
They have to. The problem for the Tyranids, and we're going to get into this more later, is that effectively they're not self-sufficient. In order to invade, they have to conquer, consume, and then move on to the next planet.
Well, because they have to make new tanks, basically.
Well, they have also to feed themselves. I mean, they are biology. So when you are biology, you have to add energy to biology. You know, the inverse here is the Necrons. The Necrons have mastered energy. So the Necrons, in theory, could make no new Necrons and go anywhere in the galaxy they want to go. The Tyranids would actually starve to death. So that's kind of the flip side of them. So while they have a purpose where they're going,
they have to conquer, they have or they just don't exist.
Yeah, exactly. Or they starve to death. So that's a kind of a key piece of them. So under though the origins of the Tyranids in the galaxy, and we're going to end up talking about a game here in a minute that both Brad and I played. And
what do you mean in a minute? Did. I'm going to talk about it right now. Let's do this.
Give it a second. Let's give me a second, and we'll get there.
Fine. So, heat it up. You know what? I'm going to pour.
Yeah, you pour wine. I'll set the stage.
We'll be right back after a quick break. It's time to accept it. The holidays are upon us, and finding gifts for people is never easy or really fun. Luckily, we at the 40K Lorecast have a new sponsor, which will help you make your holiday shopping fast and easy. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go there and buy the game Fart Bingo? Yeah, I did. Is it for my child to play with his friends? We'll go with, yeah. At the same time, I was able to get a cocktail smoker. So yeah, those are probably all for me. Anyway, that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items this holiday season. You'll find thousands of gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore. 40KLORE. That's uncommongoods.com/40KLORE for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary.
So the Tyranid invasion starts officially in M41, but they've been in the galaxy massively longer via these things that we call space hulks. Hold. This is like the scene in Braveheart. So for millennia, you know, species of the Milky Way have been leaving to explore the dark space beyond. We don't know what's in the dark space beyond. We just know bad things are out there.
Nothing good.
Yeah, nothing good.
In sci-fi, absolutely zero good.
Dark space always bad. So you get out there, ships die. It can be something simple as just a pressure loss, a system failure. Who knows? But these giant ships eventually die, and then they end up drifting back into the Milky Way.
This is also a warp thing, but continue.
Yeah, it's gonna be warp, but it can be a ship that was adrift in the warp. The demons just ripped the thing to shreds.
Well, no, I'm saying it's just the warp in my Brad theory is space hulks and things like that exist because of the fact that it's like an undertow pulls these things back.
Oh, okay.
Because physics wise, whatever direction they were going in, they keep going in.
Yeah, they could have been. I was thinking more like emergency, you head back. But you're right. That actually makes more sense.
Also, but I just feel that there's so many of them. Because space hulks, look at how I randomly got us over to there before it was time.
Yeah, we're getting there.
Space hulks are gigantic. I cannot even explain how big they are.
Well, the yes and no. The problem with space hulks, the term space hulks, yes, we have
it is an all-encompassing,
but it also could just be a freighter that came back. What happens is that with space hulks is that when they reappear in the Milky Way, either by dropping out of the warp and reappearing or just drifting in, this little small ship no one really gives a crap about. But the giant ones, everyone does. And people just say, ooh. Because
they have resources.
Yeah, I'm going to go raid this thing, which is objectively such a terrible idea.
It is after you find the first couple because they are always full of badness.
Yeah, there's nothing. It's never whatever made this thing a Hulk in space probably left a little bit of a mark. Your best case scenario is everything inside of it is dead and just a horror show. And that's very much so the best case, because the worst case is insta-death. Actually, no. That's the middle case. The worst case is not insta-death.
I say the worst case is you get drug into the warp and you do insta-death every day at 11.
It's full of demons, Drukhari, or running to them gene stealers.
And this, okay, I got to give a shameless plug. Mm-hmm. eventually GW will give us some free stuff for doing this.
Yeah.
Space Hulk is wildly super fun to play.
Space Hulk's one is actually, I think it may have got me into the game. I can't remember if, what I played first, but I remember playing a lot of Space Hulk.
You are, you know, let's just set the stage for it. Hmm?
When a Space Hulk appears, everyone, not everyone, but species rush to it to go loot it. Now, what you're going to do is you also are aware that it's probably not vacant.
You show up in force.
A common group that does this is Space Marines. They will send Space Marines.
In the game, Space Marine Terminators.
In the game,
you showed up with a squad.
You showed up with a squad of Space Marine Terminators, and the Space Hulk was full of Gene Stealers.
And this is, if you play it right, I'm saying, when you play Space Hulk, think Alien, the first Alien movie, because these Gene Stealers are showing up from the rafters, from the walls. They've infiltrated everywhere in the ship. They're coming out of the ventilation. And if you set the stage right, Space Hulk's fun, period. But if you really set the, if you're a D&D kind of guy like we are.
Space Hulk's fantastic.
Yes.
Because they're hiding on every corner. They actually kind of remade it with boarding actions. I was really happy to see when GW brought back boarding action, because I can now write my own version of it, which is a bit
Which is fun. A game in and of itself. It's not.
Yeah, it's a really, really good game. But what these were was, Space Hulk is how the Gene Stealers first got into the galaxy. And as we mentioned a few minutes ago, Gene Stealers are one of the few things like lictors that can operate fully independently of the Hive Fleet. So in the earlier portions of the game, the idea was they would just send these Space Hulks would just drift with Gene Stealers on them into the galaxy. And we'll cover in a later episode what they would do when they interacted with a new race.
Well, Gene Stealers infested them.
Yeah.
And that's a big thing. And Gene Stealers were, again, they scanned Alien, but whatever. When you look at the movie Alien, they were that intelligence plus.
Yeah, the Gene Stealers were designed to be an invasive force sitting inside things. But anyway, the game was awesome.
Yes.
You took your Terminators, and you had to just survive a ship of nightmares, and the nightmares were Gene Stealers.
And there was just kind of unlimited Gene Stealers in the game, to be honest with you. They just
all Tyranids should be that way. I'm sorry.
Because in the game, there was just more.
You had to Codex, Endless Swarm.
Because think about Space Hulk. You just tried to, your main goal was just to not die.
Yeah.
That was your objective.
GW makes really good RPG games. Like,
yeah.
Space Hulk and Blackstone Fortress are just fantastic.
Boarding action's good too.
Boarding action's a great one. Boarding action, I will encourage you guys, if you want to play a very thematic version of this game, Kill Team and Boarding Action.
Kill Team and Boarding. Kill Team's like
so good.
I wish I found Kill Team before I found 40K. Now I'm invested in 40K for forever. But Kill Team's is superior in almost every way.
Full transparency. The number one reason I don't play Kill Team is I just own too many models, and it would depress me to have this much stuff and just play with that little.
Game's also wildly faster.
Yeah, it's a great game.
So. But if you haven't played Space Hulk, I would actually go. People ask for this all the time. I want to make sure please. We do it. The reading material that goes along with Space Hulk, there's also multiple short stories. There's a lot of stuff online. There's a lot of stuff that is canon for Space Hulk that's out there. Great reads. Grab a rule book. They're actually really cheap. The old Space Hulk stuff.
You can get them. Honestly, GW's made enough money off it. Feel free to steal this.
Yeah, it's a very fun read, though, because people ask all the time, hey, what are you talking about? Give us some references. The Space Hulk reads are really good.
Mm-hmm. But so kind of with that, the reason this is important is we talk about first contact, where the Tyranids came from, et cetera. Remember, the first rogue traders, the Emperor signed off on them. We've had rogue traders for, at this point, 11,000, 12,000 years, moving throughout the galaxy. One of the key pieces they had to do was explore the fringes of the galaxy. And a lot of them just stopped radio waving.
And I know, when we say first contact, we're going to say first contact in a couple times in a minute here. First contact is 47 air quotes around it, because that is not first contact. We've had so much contact with effectively Gene Stealers and Lictors before that, because they are the forward deployers, and they've been the forward deployers while these high fleets.
Yeah. And there was another note I also think was really important here that I made that I do think we should point out, is that Tyranids are on the edge of the galaxy and unknown. in a galaxy from a mankind standpoint full of known threats. Mankind is fighting chaos very actively. Eldar, every so often. Dark Eldar, a fun pain in the butt. Orcs actually probably predate
all of it.
Well, orcs predate chaos in the battle. Remember, because mankind and Eldar weren't actually fighting during the age of
and they're semi-fighting now, so it's
right, but orcs were.
Orcs have always been.
They weren't looking for, when you're at war everywhere, constantly all the time, you're not really looking for new threats. So a lot of the Tyranid stuff that was probably happening on some of these fringes just was a I don't even want to look into it.
Think about the number of, and we've talked about this, go back and listen to a couple of our episodes in the past. There's a lot of Xenos threats just that barely get mentioned.
Oh yeah.
Exactly. I mean, super powerful Xenos. Mm-hmm. So when a small group boards a Space Hulk and encounters scary stuff.
Oh, that's a great point. It's like, who cares?
Nobody.
Hey, we read this, these things with a bunch of extra arms ran at us. Well, what happened? Well, the Terminator shot them all. Okay.
Yeah. And you're like, where was it? Like, it's a floating Hulk. Where is it now? No, I don't know.
We blew it up. Okay, yeah. Cool. And that becomes the end of the story. Yep. No one understands that there's more behind
it. Right. This is a vanguard of a possibly endless enemy.
It's potentially, well, actually, technically, they are actually infinite because they can.
Yes, that's true.
But
they just make more.
One more piece I want to dive into, kind of help people understand what we're talking about here, is that the Milky Way, we have multiple galaxies in our universe. We don't really know all of them, we know most of them. There is dark space around it. So we're going to do what I call the Neil deGrasse Tyson sidestep here, just because A, it helps at the stage, and B, lets me shit on.
John's going to do Neil deGrasse Tyson by making it less fun.
Okay.
You know what? You need this.
I do need that wine, actually. So success. Anyway, the sound you're about to hear is today's cast not brought to you by Miomai. But if they sponsor it, like, good God, we'll wear your clothes everywhere.
Head to toe.
Anyway, so the Tyranids, they're coming from another galaxy. They're not a warp race. So everything else we talk about, they use the warp to travel. The Tyranids are not a warp race, but they do touch it. But they're also not a warp entity.
But one of the biggest things about this is why we've had, when I say First Contact has 47 air quotes on it, is because they sent four deployers thousands of years ago, basically.
Yeah.
And because the rest of their force is taking the slow road to nowhere to get here.
But it does matter because they can't do warp travel. So the thing is, the Tyranids have to move through the galaxy in a linear fashion. They don't get to jump and move through stuff.
Yes, but they have weird travel. But continue.
Well, it's like Timothy Necrons have some weird travel, but it's still limited. So just to kind of set the stage here, you're about to get a bitch fest. Deal with it. The Milky Way is one of the largest galaxies in the universe. It's about 100,000 light years wide, and it contains about 100 to 400 billion stars. I didn't know that till I went and looked it up.
It's several.
Yeah, and that's annoying because mankind, according to GW, is covering the majority of the galaxy.
No, we control
if you actually look at it from the map of the galaxy, we're controlling over 50% of it, and we have 1 million star systems. So that is, here comes a lot of zeros, 0.00001% of the galaxy.
Yeah, there's stuff happening in the Milky Way.
Oops. Anyway, but the important part here is dark space. So dark space is the gap between galaxies. Up until about 1997, again, you can tell I do some research here, guys, we actually thought there was nothing in dark space. We thought the in-between galaxies was nothing, and then we got better telescopes, and we're like, no, there actually are, but they're very few and far between.
There's topography there,
yeah,
too.
We do have stars in between them. So the reason that this matters is that, you know, once you get outside of the galaxy, you are 50,000 light years to the next to Andromeda. So there's a massive gap here, and we don't really know what's out there. So this is really important because any intergalactic system that wants to travel from one galaxy to the next, that gap there is insane. So this is why we don't know where the Tyranids are coming from. And we're going to cover this a bit more. Originally, the Tyranids invaded from one part of our galaxy. And then later it's from another part of our galaxy.
From the opposite side.
Exactly. So now it becomes this question of how big is this army? Yeah, because Andromeda, for example, is the next closest system to the Milky Way. Andromeda's 2 million light years away. So if you were, it moved, so we, just for math, if you're moving at light speed, it would take you 2 million years to get from Andromeda to the Milky Way. And Andromeda, by the way, is kind of what you would consider east of the galaxy. If you look at the GW map and you look at the way the galaxy's written, like, so why am I doing this tangent? Because this helps with build the mystery of the Tyranids.
Because they start invading from all sections of mm-hmm. the galaxy. So you go, where did they originate from? I don't know. Also, is this an encircling move? Is it, again, you don't know how big the Tyranids are. With them coming from different sections mm-hmm. of the galaxy, if they're actually making a slow move into us, that means that they are wildly, just crazily bigger threat than everything else.
The size of the Tyranids is absolutely incredible. I mean, when we look at it from this perspective, especially because I think it's because they're coming from dark space, we can't see them. We don't know. You can, that there's no light with a telescope. I can't see out there. And as we'll cover later, they also block out the warp. So.
And listen, I'm just going to throw it out there. This is going to be real bad for the Imperium if all of the high fleets are basically random scout squads.
Well, it's over. I mean, if that's the case.
When the real force shows up, you're going to be real bummed.
Yeah. So what this does matter, though, is the Tyranids, the theory is that their entire species is coming into the Milky Way right now. And they're going to use the Milky Way to consume them, and then they have to move on to the next. What we don't know is, have they done this before? You know, did they eat another galaxy already? Are they going to eat, you know, what's coming? We don't know. And that's what makes them terrifying.
Crazy terrifying.
Yeah.
And they don't, again, which is why this is not so stupid
anymore.
We don't know why they came, what they came for, and you can't negotiate with them.
You can't talk to them.
I mean, at all.
Yeah.
They don't communicate at all with you.
Yeah. It is weird they have vocal cords. Anyway, I'm not going to get into Tyranid biology.
Some of them do.
Yeah, it's just going to be weird. Anyway. So let's talk about what brought the Tyranids into the galaxy. And this has been rewritten a little bit. So
a little bit?
Just a tad. Just a tad. So we know the Tyranids can see into the warp, sort of. And we know this because they seem to follow warp energy. They seem to...
They also can manipulate warp energy. They're weird masters of the warp while not touching the warp.
It's weird because, like, Chaos Demons don't, like, they're aware of their existence, but they can't infest them. We'll get to that in a little bit. But so the Tyranids seem... my theory on this is just that since everything that touches the warp leaves a mark, I think the Tyranids just, they're using a variation of warp sight to find things to consume. It helps them understand it, which would make sense because they have to travel such incredible distances. They can't, and again, they're a living being. Are they probably using some variation of stasis? Yeah, we know that but still there's a limited amount of energy that they have. So they have to make their moves strategically.
They also, one of the biggest things about Tyranids that I think is wild is they use the warp, they don't travel through the warp, and they don't have an effect on the warp as far as GW writings.
Yep, which is interesting to say the least.
You know, the only people that have ever used the warp and didn't have an effect on the warp, old ones.
are we hinting the later part of this episode? Weird. On our last episode, we talked about the Astronomicon and the joy that thing is.
Joy. Black ship, otherwise known as fun ships.
Just the fun ships of, like, this is super, we're taking you guys back to the ultimate carnival ride. Anyway, the Astronomicon is just a giant beacon and allows you to see it from anywhere in the warp. That being said,
you beat me to it. In the end, it's just a straight lighthouse.
So... humanity can see it. Eldar can see it. Chaos can see it. Tyranids can see it. Everything can see the Astronomicon. It does, though, have a limited reach. We do talk about this a little bit in the last one. It's about 70,000 light years. So it's kind of, when you get to the fringes, it's a very dim light that's just a little bit out there. As you get further into the galaxy, you're very well aware of it. But what we didn't talk about last time, because we're saving it for this one, is it's not the first of its kind. The Necrons built their own similar.
But they weren't warp entities. They were more anti. All their stuff is anti-warp.
But it's Blackstone. The problem with Blackstone is both warp energy and anti-warp energy at all times.
It synergizes. I mean, it promotes, it amplifies both.
Yep.
It amplifies your ability to negate the warp. And if you have the warp, it amplifies your ability to use the warp.
Yeah. So the Necrons built something called Pharos, which were kind of all over the galaxy. And what they were was these actually, to those of you who heard my tirade in the last one, would triangulate your position because there's more than one of them. They didn't know where they were. They built them around the galaxy because what the Necrons did was the Necrons didn't use warp, but they used phasing technology. They could effectively teleport across the galaxy.
Used Einstein bridges, basically.
Yeah. And so they would jump across the galaxy, and the Pharos were the way that they would triangulate position to be able to do this. They built them all over the galaxy. When they went into hibernation, they turned these off, except for one. And this is actually one. We're going to not give this story the justice it deserves, but whatever, we're going to do it real quick. Horus Heresy, to help Horus out, Chaos made massive warp storms.
Only around certain places.
Of course. This meant, and they did to trap the Imperium, the Loyalists in certain areas. When a warp storm really gets up and going, even the Astronomicon gets obscured. So your navigators can now no longer do anything. So for a period of time, all the warp travel was like really short jumps. The key thing here was that Gilliman and his legion end up getting just stuck.
With the Triad.
Yep.
Lion Sanguinis and Bobby G got stuck.
And while they were stuck, they found a world called Sotha, which had one of these beacons on it. And Gilliman realized he could actually use this beacon as a staging point.
Sorry, everyone, but this is one of my favorite stories because Conrad Cruz is one of my favorite Primarchs because of the fact that he's the Joker, period. Yeah. Sorry, he's just a Primarch Joker.
Yeah.
And he did nothing that did anything good, but he just harassed them around this place. And they didn't even know what it was, but he was there to just screw with them.
Be a pain in the ass. And so the Ultramarines used this beacon to reach out. And did they start launching a new Imperium there? That's a fun story for another day. Because there were some...
Cough, Sanguinius is the Emperor.
Yeah, oops. Anyway, by using it as this meeting point, Blood Angels, the Dark Angel, Ultramarines, we're all in this one spot. The traitor legions noticed this and decided, well, we should also take that out because, holy crap, the greatest force of the entire loyalist is now in this one area. It's the three most powerful legions, and they're all just hanging out, getting ready.
I mean, they sent one guy.
Well, yeah, they didn't try. They just sent the Conrad and his buddy.
They said Conrad and went, just basically make it irritating. Effectively, what they said was, Conrad, go be Conrad. Yeah.
Which he was all about. I mean, to be fair, go Conrad, go. Anyway, long story short, Night Lords infiltrate Sotha, blah, 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 battle, more battle, conflict. And then in a giant twist of GW writing, a single person sacrificed themselves with nobility to save everybody else.
The rest of the story is actually really cool. Read that story.
Yeah, but anyway, what happens is that they overload the Pharos, which blows up and then blows up the Night Lord fleet.
Well, the thing is that one of the reasons Necrons are such a threat, mm-hmm. again, mastered energy, all of their beacon, their structures have effectively a potential energy of almost infinite.
Right. But what happens when they blow up the Pharos here with this, because this is, to Brad's point, the amount of energy stored in this one device is so insane that you just set off this incredible firework in the middle of the galaxy.
I mean, in the story too, they vaporized. It wasn't just a big boom. It was almost infinite amounts of energy are contained.
Think about a nuclear explosion on Earth, but make that in the middle of a system.
yeah.
that level of suck.
And also like make the nuclear weapon would be a small firecracker. It'd be a sparkler compared to what
I mean, and like from the perspective of like the thing that on Earth is the most destructive force ever, that level of destructive force, but it can do the same thing to an entire system. Like, it's insane. This, in theory, triggers kind of a giant flash that can be seen from outside of the galaxy.
Were the Tyranids already traveling? Were they not?
This is what we have no idea.
No idea.
The theory, one of the kind of one of the theories, this is in the codexes, is the idea that the Tyranids, this flash occurs. And a species that is, as we discovered in dark space, traveling through the millions of light years of darkness that is dark space in some sort of stasis naturally is triggered by this bright flash of light and pays some attention to it and begins moving
towards
that light. Again, this occurred around M31. The Tyranids show up in M41. So
again, air quotes. They were already here for
a while. They should have been forced in 41.
I'm getting
they'd obviously been here. Because we now know that there's old bio ships that they've actually found of Tyranids from like M35. We know they've been around and touched the Milky Way, but this seems to be what brings them in. I think, just my theory, is that the Hive Fleet always knew, just because of the cluster of stars in the Milky Way, that there was something of value there.
I agree with that theory. I think they were already on their way here. Mm-hmm. But I also think that they were already on their way here for different reasons.
Yeah, and so we're going to get into some fans, some stuff in a second. But
this will be all fan
theories. Oh, yeah. Because my idea, this was kind of like, I used the difference of the Eye of Sauron, where, you know, Sauron's looking all over the place, but the second that he detects the ring, his eye just moves.
Yep.
It's like, boom, we're going. That's what this was. They're moving slowly toward the galaxy because they assume there's something there. And then this flash goes off. They don't know it's a Pharos exploding. To them, it's an explosion of life that exists there, so which is food. Let's go get there. And because it's still very far away. Now, let's have some more fun about fan theory time. The other fan theory that I read about this, and by fan theory, I mean Reddit, was that it was actually a combination of events. Because this explosion at Sotha is about 1,000 to 2,000 years after the birth of Slaanesh, which also would have been a pretty big...
I mean, Sotha was a joke compared to the birth of Slaanesh, which destroyed the Eldar homeworld and all of their home systems. Yeah,
and ripped a hole in the galaxy.
Yeah.
So the idea of this fan theory, which I just like a lot, is that the Tyranids are somewhere way out in dark space. The birth of Slaanesh happens and they go, ooh, food. Let's start moving that way. Then the explosion of Sotha gives them a kind of a second trigger so that it's no longer, I think there's something there, that now I know there's something there.
But they were already traveling.
So let's speed up. So we talked a little bit about what a Hive Fleet is, but what not mix it up. We haven't really talked about space travel in the 41st millennia, but... And we're going to get more in a future cast. All beings use some sort of ship, though, to move around. So the Eldar have giant ships they basically live on. The orcs jury-rig stuff.
You know, a box that they
think. A box that they think, well...
Why wouldn't it?
This works. They all hold hands. Necrons, even Tau, have giant ship-ish things. I'm trying to not shit on them as much. But anyway, it's impossible to move people without this, and the Tyranids
know. Use your new word. I'm so proud of you for it.
But my quintillions?
Yes.
Yeah, I looked up the word. It is quintillions of people. More than that.
You get a gold star for that.
There's some serious Google of like, hey, I should look this up after like 37 casts of saying, I don't know, maybe something. I literally have two cell phones, one from work, one from personal, and own three computers. I should probably be able to use the internet at some point. So we're about to describe a Tyranid fleet. For those of you who've played StarCraft.
It's that.
So you guys can skip ahead.
You know what? I'm going to give GW a little more props on this. If you've read, not just watched, Starship Troopers, it is actually more of that.
Yeah. Also, such a different book than movie.
The book's awesome. The
book's incredible. The movie's fine.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
So the Tyranids, remember, don't manufacture anything. They grow everything. Well, yeah. they grow. They don't make it. They don't. There's no Tyranid factories.
True. They are factories.
Yeah, exactly. So everything they use is a bioweapon. So, you know, I will say laws of physics imply there is probably some warp power at play here. Like, I'm not 100% how this would actually work. Maybe they're descended from a being that had strong connections to the warp.
Can I talk about the fact that Tyranid weapons are the grossest in the galaxy, though?
I'm trying to think through the Death Guard?
Here, I'll give you one Tyranid weapon. Tyranids fire a superheated cockroach that hits you, crawls into you, and explodes.
You know who else does that? The orcs. That's what a squig launcher does.
That is true, actually. It's not as gross. It's more funny with
that. Okay, because you know what a squig is? A Tyranid. Their problems are solved. So with this level of movement, it's the same with the Hive Fleet. So the entire fleet is made up of literally living ships that are also the factories we were just talking about.
Which are also interconnected, though. We got to remember that all of this stuff operates as one mind.
Mm-hmm. And so as these massive ships transporting move through, they're consuming worlds. They're actually growing and hatching and evolving new species.
Well, they're gaining intelligence also.
Yeah. We'll get to that later. Each conflict is that they grow. But these fleets take part in every element of a Tyranid invasion. Whereas like a humanity fleet, you'd think of it as the fleet would come in. It would drop off the soldiers. So soldiers would then fight. Then the next fleet would come in and bring the terraforming. Then the fleet would come in and bring the people. The Tyranids, it's only one fleet. So the Tyranid fleet is, in theory, an all-encompassing segment of their army. There is no, like when, for example, a Tyranid fleet doesn't invade, and we're going to cover this next episode, how they do it, but they don't invade, and the next chunk of ships come in. It's the same ship, just ripping a planet to shreds. And so this brings to the question of how they move through the galaxy. And this is actually kind of cool. So we're going to talk about I always like to give GW props when they do stuff right. GW will sometimes go down a rabbit hole of writing. And this one they did a good job of. The Tyranids don't use the warp to travel. So they have to move faster than light. And they rather than just say they can move faster than light, which is what I would have expected someone to write, they actually wrote out a whole thing called a narval. And the reason I like this writing is the narval both explains how the Tyranids can move through the galaxy, but also explains the limitations in their movement through the galaxy.
They do jump moves.
Yeah. So the narval effectively creates a gravity well between the fleet and a target point. And then that gravity well rips the ship and the fleet.
Battlestar Galactica move.
Yep.
Is exactly what a narval is.
Look, I'm trying to give them some credit for not it's incredibly ironic for a company as litigious around intellectual property as GW is. They're incredible.
It's just Battlestar Galactica. I know
joy in ripping off Battlestar Galactica Dune.
I'm just saying that if you watch Battlestar Galactica, that's what a narwhal is.
I know.
It's a jump.
It's just more fun.
And it's exactly described. If you want a better description, watch Battlestar Galactica, because they talk about how it works. And it's exactly what the narwhal does.
Fair. Anyway. Oh, fair. So the cool thing about the narwhal that does hold it back a little bit is it can only work between two points. It can't work through. So the Tyranids don't have the ability, if there are planets or a system between where they are and where they want to be, they have to go to that point. They can't jump through it because, much like in Star Wars, you know, if you engage your warp drive, you engage your hyperspace drive, if there's an asteroid belt in the middle, you die. That should be. So the Tyranids can only therefore invade in straight systems. The other thing that's actually important here is it creates a gravity well between the two systems. You can detect this. And we're going to talk about that more in some later casts. but you actually now, you do have some warnings that the Tyranids are coming, because planets, all of a sudden, earthquakes, solar flares, all this stuff just starts rocking through the system. It's a heads up that the Tyranid fleet's on its way.
I mean, it'd be a really good heads up if it were not the most bureaucratically inefficient system ever.
Yeah. Well, if you were organized.
Yeah. You're like, hey, we totally know they're coming. And then you have to tell 43 middle managers to get the mm-hmm. note sent. And then they have 43 more other guys that have to stamp it so that somebody else can see that message.
It seems like in the latest version, now that a cough, cough, custodes are involved in the process, they'd be a bit, they're a bit more, they're operating a bit quicker in the.
Because they also have a real good disciplinary status of, I will cut your head off if I don't get this message.
So this is kind of the other piece that also does come with the Tyranids is one of, I think, the most powerful and coolest elements is the Shadow of the World.
Oh, it's amazing.
So, as we said, no one can explain, and this is a good thing, how the Tyranids interact with the warp.
Which, again, let's go back to it again. Mm-hmm. They have warp users, zoanthropes. They yeah. use warp powers, like devastating warp powers, to destroy things.
Oh, yeah.
And not just a little bit of lightning. They pick up tanks and destroy.
Yeah, this isn't lightning bolt. This is actually, I mean, they removed the spoiler alert for episode 3, they removed the craft world.
Yeah. they do some real shit here. And the best part is the fleet by itself. Well, yes, I'm not wrong, but also I'm not right. any of the synaptic entities gives off what is just a nightmare around them mm-hmm. that affects the warp. It also makes you... We did
this psyker.
Oh. Well, we talked about it. We talked about blanks.
Yeah.
It has a similar effect on non-psykers where you just, mm-hmm. you have a sense of dread, this overwhelming terror that is everywhere about you. And that's just a thing they do.
They just do. What's terrifying about the Shadow and the Warp is it really does. It blocks the warp completely. So as you come in, astropaths cannot communicate.
Which is such a huge deal because when you're talking about the Imperium, which is effectively trying to light the fires of Gondor mm-hmm. to let everybody know when something happens, you don't get to let anybody know that this happened. And you don't leave any evidence behind because they consume the entire world, the entire system.
One thing I want to point out that when I was reading, I think it's important here. It's actually the inverse of a blank, though. Whereas a yeah. blank, just warp doesn't exist within them. What this seems to be is actually the Shadow of the Warp is just all the Tyranids talking to each other.
It's because overwhelming it's white.
Zillions, yeah.
I've got this. I actually thought about this a long time ago with this because that's how big of a nerd I am. Hmm? But I think that the Shadows of Warp is overwhelming white noise.
Yeah, I agree. And they talk about it a little bit in that point where like psykers all of a sudden just like they go insane because their brain just gets filled with, and it would make sense. Imagine hearing, you imagine walking past an ant colony and hearing every single communication those ants are making in your brain at once. It would just shut you down. And that's what they talk about. So that's why like it's not a force field that prevents the astropaths from speaking through it. It's just so much noise. They just can't communicate through it and it envelops them. And so they talk about that, like psykers, when the Shadow Warp gets nearby, they just get overwhelmed with voices and sounds, and they just feel like the things are like scratching at their mind. Psykers commit suicide pretty consistently when a Tyranid fleet comes in, not even because they know what's happening, but because of what's going on in their brain is so horrid that makes a black shift seem fun.
I do want to point out that we're going to talk about this more later, but I have to touch on this because we're already talking about it. This is one of the most terrifying aspects of the Tyranids is what the hell is controlling that puts out that much power
yeah.
that it can control quadrillions of,
yeah.
of organisms, but also it's real-time communicating with every single thing in the fleet at the exact same time. Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's a powerful That's intelligence.
That's a really, really good point.
I mean, that's terrifying.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point.
Their day-to-day, I'm just doing shit, is the most powerful thing that's ever happened ever.
And so what this really matters is that when the Tyranid fleet gets even just close to a system, this kicks in. That means the system's done. So you have no astropaths. It also means the navigators can't see in anymore. So if you're coming to the fleet using FTL drives, you're fine. You can move in. This won't affect your FTL. But if you're trying to warp jump in, well, you can't see it.
The only thing the Imperium has gotten good about this is once they find a threat, they look for where they can't see.
Right.
And they go close to there.
And then move. And then
kind of. Yep. And then FTL from there.
FTL from there. But this is, yeah, so no astropaths, no messages. So this is what Brandon were discussing earlier about we don't know when the Tyranids first got here. This is why, because it would just appear, an area would just go dark. You have no communication to it. Meanwhile, Abaddon's in his, like seventh crusade. And so you're just there like, you know what? I don't care. Or send some rogue traders over there, see what's going on, but I don't care. And you don't realize that it was actually the greatest threat to the galaxy is just eating your planets. So with all that, let's have some real fun and talk about why are they here. This is the part I've been holding Brad back this whole episode.
I don't even know how much of this is going to be edited. Leave this in.
No, we're doing this.
I've tried to talk about this three times so far.
Yeah, Brad, and I've cut Brad off every time.
Every single time he said no.
We're getting there. So well, here's what we know. We know the Tyranids come from outside of the galaxy. We know that they're heading towards Terra.
But they're not making it again. Mm-hmm. Blah. They're not beelining towards Terra. If they were just, that was our end goal.
True.
And that's it. They would make a straight line. They are not making a straight line.
So I think there are kind of two things they look at here. Are they coming here to search for something? Are they just here randomly to eat? Or the really fun one, are they running away?
The scariest thing is,
are they running away from
something? What the hell are they running away from? Yeah.
Are we a stop on the way out because something else is coming? So, because we don't know, have they been to other galaxies? We don't know what have they done. So we're going to drive into kind of what I think are the four best fan theories that exist. Starting off with probably the what is likely the most accurate, but just the one that's the least fun, which is there's
a boring.
Locust. Yeah, it's a locust swarm. They are a borderline mindless race.
See, I refuse to believe this one though, because the power of intelligence that it takes to run all of this.
Oh, I totally agree.
Is just I refuse to believe
is all that, just so they can eat
that things. You're just derping through the galaxy when you have this overwhelming intelligence.
Yeah, this theory is just to kind of hash out for you. This theory is that the Tyranids are actually not an intellectually evolved race. They're an instinctive race. And all the changes that they make where they create new life forms and all this stuff, it's just a means of survival. Survival.
They have
no purpose.
Yeah. At this point in time, they're a wildly powerful AI that sucks.
Yeah. That's really
And I hate that theory.
Yeah. Everyone does. But the way that I look at this is like the Tyranids' biggest problem is that they can't farm. So all of their energy, it's true, all of their energy comes from consuming something and moving on to the next one. They never mastered irrigation.
Sure, but it's still just, it makes sense from a basic standpoint.
Yeah.
It makes sense because they became the perfect beings to continue to consume and move.
And this is what a locust swarm does. A locust swarm will just eat and eat and eat until it doesn't have enough food source, in which case it just dies. So that's what Tyranid, this is the theory of Tyranids. And when I say this is a fan theory, this is kind of the closest thing to what GW's written. So
they allude to more though. They always allude to more.
Yeah. So let's move on to more fun ones. The next one is that they're searching for a great power. And that this goes Brad's concept. They do know they do have a higher purpose. They do have a goal and they're searching they're searching the universe for something. And yeah, this one, the hive mind has a plan. This is why they're trying to find new worlds. I don't think they're trying to find peace for themselves in a galaxy, but
it makes sense that it makes more sense. This theory, this isn't my favorite theory by far, but this theory makes sense that they're coming here because also things like the Eye of Terror would make a great amount of sense.
Yeah.
Because the Eye of Terror, well, the Rift now,
But it came in during the Eye of Terror.
Right.
Yeah.
Is effectively an endless source of power.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for something to run your race, this makes sense.
The one I like about this would be that the Tyranid hive mind doesn't know what the warp is, but is touching the warp, and it's looking for a way to get to eat the warp effectively. And that would, to me, make sense. So like Astronomicon and the Eye of Terror would be...
Yeah, but it'd be infinite. If they were looking for just something to drain, the warp is forever.
And this would give them the ultimate power-up.
Right. They could just keep drawing power from this forever. Because instead of consuming worlds, you'd be consuming the warp, which is forever.
Yeah. And this feeds really into the next one, because it would be the same purpose, that they're actually not coming to... they're still coming to consume the galaxy.
They're never good guys.
Yeah, but they're coming because they're being chased by something else. And they're coming to... We are a stopping point. And so it's that same thing of like the Astronomicon, Eye of Terror, whatever it is, are a way to power up to either fight back or to get themselves to Andromeda.
I mean, this is so terrifying though, because what the hell are they fleeing from?
Oh God.
Like, Jesus.
Yeah, there's not if what Tyranids can do and the power and the size they are afraid of something.
Yeah, bad news bears.
You know who they're not fleeing? I feel very confident in this statement. The Tau.
You know what's
actually that would be the greatest rewrite of all time, that the Tau were actually like a splinter of the most powerful like race that exists, like Andromeda, and that's the race that's been it's chasing to eliminate the Tyranids and
just
the
entire ending galaxy. Civilizations.
Yeah, let's run with that. That's what it is. Like the Tau and the Milky Way.
They are the race from the Expanse. Also, watch the show, read the books. The books are even better.
Oh yeah. Sorry, that was a fun one.
But they're that race.
Yeah,
everything.
That's what's really going on. But let's go to the real one. The one that everyone, so this is the one when we talk about, we said the real one. GW hasn't written this yet.
This is the oldest fan fiction there is, though.
Yeah, and it is the greatest.
This showed up from like the beginning of the game.
Because people are clever. And we are all, the fun thing about GW is that it's all made up. So they can do whatever they want.
Mm-hmm.
And the hope is, in an element of like Peter Pan here, if enough of us believe this next theory, maybe they'll make it real. So this is that the Tyranids are the old ones.
And also, they're the remnants. They're the brain-injured, I was in an accident old ones, because the old ones had to flee.
Mm-hmm.
They were getting killed.
By the enslavers.
The enslavers.
The enslavers came out of the warp and targeted them. And the idea is that the idea of this one, and it actually, as Brad said, because this is so old, it's been written very, very well. And the concept to kind of catch everyone up is that the enslavers hunt psychic beings. So in order to protect themselves from the enslavers, the old ones would have severed their connection to the warp.
And fled. They effectively made the biggest jump to somewhere else. Yes. And it could be, we don't know where we're going, but it can't be here.
And as a result of all this, they would have had to then figure out a new way to communicate that doesn't use the warp. Maybe like a centralized intelligence.
And also this means that is the hive mind multiple old ones? Is that why the hive fleets are so different? I love this thing.
Because let's go through what the old ones could do. Could they create life?
Yep.
Could they communicate kind of both in and outside? They were both in and outside the warp. They made the original
webway. Cough, webway. Yep.
All this seems to line up. And so the question then becomes, are the Tyranids a devolved version of the old ones? Or are the Tyranids, maybe there's only three or four old ones left who've now merged into the hive mind, and this is their progeny that they've created?
Again, or the hive mind is interconnected old ones, and that's why they're different, because each of the old ones has different hopes, dreams, and whatevers, or cognitive abilities left. Remember, the old ones were also next level consciousness. They were literally creating life by did I have a computer? Nah, I'm just going to do some calculations.
I'm going to do sound, and we're going to do the same thing.
I'm going to do calculations in my head to make life. They were powerful sentience. You know what I mean?
And in this theory, the Tyranids are coming back to the galaxy much in the same way the Necrons set up their reawakenedness. They had a timing, and now they're going to come back to the galaxy to consume it. you know, and or to reconquer it.
Well, a lot of the above, because you can go, are they spiteful? I mean, I would be.
Spiteful, or it could just be actually my theory on this one is that they lost a lot of their intelligence. That what happened was you spend millions of years out there in the darkness.
I mean, they did create. Tyranids are the ultimate adaptive race. Mm-hmm. They will make things work no matter what.
And that's why this lines up so well, because you think about what they made. You look at the races that they created. We have, it wasn't humanity. You had the Jokero, who are just instinctively able to create a weapon.
Whatever they want.
You have the Eldar, who they didn't actually create. They uplifted them, but they gave them the ability.
I mean, they didn't create, but they did.
But the best one is the Orcs. And if you look at how the Orcs function, how the Tyranids function, it's pretty...
It's very similar.
Very similar.
But, I mean, sorry, Orcs. Orcs are one of my favorites, but Tyranids are just... upgraded Orcs.
Oh, yeah. Well, because the difference is Orcs still have to fight. There's a hierarchy and they interfight. One key thing about Tyranids don't interfight. We have no record in any codex, in any story of Tyranids attacking other Tyranids. So they seem to be fully unified in this. But in my mind, it would make sense that the old ones are more.
Well, I think there's more old ones because the Tyranids don't interfight, but the Tyranids also don't help each other.
Yeah, that is true. But that also could just be a self-preservation where they could say, all right.
I'm just saying the high fleets are all separate entities.
Yes, they are. But they do touch and they never attack.
Yep. Well, yeah, so true.
But this is one, Brad and I actually had this debate outside of this. This is a really great rabbit hole to jump down, by the way. And I encourage all of you to do it because it actually is quite fun.
I would love to have this in the Discord, everyone. Please, after you listen to this, start a thread.
I start the threads, but if people ask me for it, I'll create the thread.
Well, I don't even know what a thread means. I thought it was just like start a discussion. But also, this is how much I know about
channel.
Anything.
Actually, I'll start. I can start a tier. What are the Tyranids channel, and we can have some fun with it.
Oh, John's gonna do this because I'm gonna harp on him until he does do it. Now,
it's fine.
Also, I'm gonna do this so much, and he's going to keep telling me that the episode's not even out yet. Please shut up. And it's going to be awesome.
Yeah. All right. So with that, though, that's actually kind of where we wanted to end this episode, just to kind of give you guys a background of the Tyranids. On our next episode, we're going to talk about the makeup of Tyranid fleets, their armies, how they interact, and more importantly, how they invade a planet. And this is that because there's two key ways they do it. Gene Stealers and Other, which is actually... Ooh, I actually don't know which ones. The good news for your planet.
Gene Stealers are way worse.
Yeah, but the good news is that when Gene Stealers invade your planet, you get to keep living on it for a while. Part two.
Yeah.
Part two, the sky starts. Literally, the entire
planet. I would rather at least try to fight as opposed to having everyone I know is actually a Gene Stealer.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Right about the time I'm dying, I go, oh, man.
Yeah, and then we'll also talk about what the Imperium or forces can actually do about a Tyranid invasion. It's not, it involves fire and all of the fire. But with that, please once again like and subscribe to the cast and join the Discord. As you can see, this one's probably going to lead to quite a lot of Discord discussion because there's going to be quite a bit of fan theory kicking through here. It is the best place to ask us questions and provide us feedback. Again, we are active in it. If there's anything we said in here that you thought was wrong or we forgot, you can tell us there and you'll get pretty quick reaction to it. But with that, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys next week.